the streets of Melrose Park to the trading floor of the Merc. He's fought for every dollar he's ever earned. And now, with personal liberty and our system of capitalism under assault in America, he's here to seize back our rights from the government. With a cigar in one hand and a copy of the Declaration of Independence in the other, he's Sean Thompson. And this is the Sean Thompson Show.
This looks like a job for me, so everybody just follow me, because we need a little controversy.
Very interesting man that you're about to hear. He's a veteran of two White Houses, three presidential transitions, six presidential campaigns, worked for Fox News for 20 years as a columnist for Newsday for 15 years. He's been around, and I love his name, not to mention his new book, which I can't wait to get through, The Secret of Directional Investing, Money Making Amidst the Red and Blue Rumble. He is James Pinkerton. Thank you very much for joining me. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've seen you. I know who you are. I realize the legacy of work you've been in politics. I didn't realize that it was two White Houses, three presidential transitions, and six presidential campaigns. And yet, I'm sure nothing prepared you for the year 2020 through 24, has it?
There's your answer.
Yes, it's insanity. But it's interesting because one thing's for certain is that I've never felt, and I'm somebody who likes to pay attention to economics, I have never felt that the market is as phony as a third wife in a suburb of Chicago where the average husband is 50 years older than the wife. This looks to me like a completely subsidized market where the companies don't produce income. There are no fundamental economics. It is only derived from government policy and spending and the lack of oversight. And that's how I see the market. So how do you possibly write a book about directional investing?
Well, I mean, back to the max, the market's at 38,000. You know, NVIDIA stock is worth $1 trillion. AI has got a pretty good future. Eight of the 10 largest companies in the world are in the U.S. I mean, there's a lot going on here. There's a lot of things to worry about. There's a lot of things to ponder, but a lot of things to make money on. And I'm for that.
You know, it's interesting. Corrections are something that used to happen before we broke the rules of capitalism in order to save it. So a lot of what I'm hearing when we talk about these companies that are AI heavily invested or NVIDIA, I'm also aware of NVIDIA. I remember when Nancy Pelosi disclosed that she had bought calls when they were $175. But one thing I remember is the 90s, the late 90s, before the collapse in 2000. And back then, the old timers, the fundamentalists, the guys who were like, well, I don't understand. There's no fundamental earnings. There's no fundamental income. There's only what could be. What if be? Does it sound like that a little bit to you?
It does, but the S&P went from 7,000 to 2,500 in during the dot-com bubble a quarter century ago, and now it's at 15,000. So again, markets go up, they go down. The point is, even if you think the market is going to go down, I mean, for example, suppose you were smart enough to think that Disney was having trouble with wokeness 3 or 4 years ago and destroying, the Star Wars franchise and so on, you would have said, well, gosh, I better short the stock, in which case, the stock has gone down 40% in the last 3 years. You would have made a lot of money. And so that's what the book is about, is observing trends and then, including, as the title suggests, the Red Blue Rumble. Obviously, big companies like Disney and,
James,
have had terrible trouble. Yeah. Negotiating these changes, and that's an opportunity for investors.
I'm sure you're a fan of Reminiscence of a Stock Operator and Jesse Livermore, right? Do I have it right?
Sure.
So you remember the trend following, and then it went on to inspire some notable investors. And the trends used to have those principles. You remember that they had to come up with new innovation, new acquisitions, or new management. And it's something when you realize the way in which we see an unusual anomaly. You have the massive policy spending that is bolstering companies that are in this green energy, which I believe to be a boondoggle. They produce no real profit, but these companies have massive growth. And then you wonder, when does the stagflation come in? Because ultimately, when the rubber hits the road, there has to be some correction. But really, I have yet to see a real correction since we funded all of and bailed out and changed the trajectory of integrity in the market the way I see it after 2009. And now you have the normalization of massive debt, incredible government spending without the revenue. And when you uncouple from that, how do you pick it? Well, do you just pick it on policy? What am I supposed to pay attention to?
Well, I mean, it's a true fact that the government has put $20 trillion into green energy, and we can all have an opinion on how good, you know, windmills and solar are working for Germany, for example. However, at the same time, again, go back to AI. You know, a search on ChatGPT consumes 60 times the energy of a Google search. So there's a lot of energy consumption there. If you take AI, forget the stock, just think the technology of AI has got a future, and you can see an enormous energy consumption, which might explain, this is an important point, why the stock of Exxon, which is about as retro as you can get, but is nonetheless doubled in the same time in the last 3 years. In the same time that Disney has gone down by half, Exxon has more than doubled. So, again, if you just observe, if you think AI is headed upward, then consumption is headed upward too, and that means good things for either, you know, oil and gas, potentially nuclear, you know, geothermal, who knows? But the point is, that's where the investor has to be, you know, on his toes and thinking, okay, which one of these stocks and their energy sources are going to go up?
Now, with your experience in politics, with what you've seen and the way in which it has seemed to change the power structure of the influence of the economy, because you have to admit, when you started with Reagan, right?
Right.
You know, you look at the way in which the political influence is so directional that just by a mere policy or a word, instead of it affecting the market, it can forever change it. Is that something that you think is good or bad when you realize that most of the people in charge of our politics really don't know anything about anything?
Well, it's a hard question to know whether it's good or bad, but what I can say for sure is that it is. And, you know, my book talks about how the railroads got going. I mean, what got Chicago to replace St. Louis is the major city in the Midwest. It was the difference between riding the railroads and taking the river, and so or the internet. You know, the Communications Decency Act of 1996 included the famous provision, Section 230, which really enabled social media to take off. And so, you know, again, that legislative decision, which nobody was really thinking about too much back, you know, almost 30 years ago now, has led to the growth of these, you know, multi-trillion-dollar companies.
You know, it's amazing when you remember the way in which the economy was really set ablaze from the Reagan years. And he worked tirelessly to take away the powers of government. And I remember that very famous speech when he said, I want you to go out and earn, go out and start businesses. And he deregulated so much of what was keeping innovation down. And he created something that you don't hear the term anymore, the yuppie, the up-and-coming professional. I don't think you have yuppies. I remember watching a Wall Street movie, and he said the generation is now called the ninja generation. No income, no jobs, no assets. Do you think that we need to go back to that kind of ideology that really spurred the true growth of the private economy, not the public economy that controls the direction and velocity of money?
Well, I was proud to work in the 1980 Reagan campaign, and what got me excited about Reagan back then was, among other things, was the Kemp-Roth tax cut, the 30% across-the-board rate cut. That was a huge deal and made all the difference in the world for the economy. And so, sure, you know, and that's a lesson for investors. It's like, which within the United States, which states are doing it right and which states are doing it wrong? I mean, you know, when Illinois sees, for example, Ken Griffin, you know, leaving Chicago to go to Florida, that's a pretty heavy signal that Illinois is doing something wrong. And, you know, that's a matter for the people of Illinois to decide. What an investor can observe is, okay, which is going to do better, Illinois or Florida, New York or California, Massachusetts or Texas?
So before I ask the obvious question, I want to get your take on something. One of the beautiful things to watch during the 70s was the fight by really intellectuals, but intellectuals that were not coming out and saying they were Republican or Democrat, but they were intellectuals that were discussing the principles of propertyism, often referred to as capitalism. And they constantly talked about the private property rights and the only way to stop that then Jimmy Carter years and the inflation and the recession and all of it was to go back to the idea that you are entitled to your property. And they were worried about fighting off the idea that things would be a complete redistribution society. And I loved that. There was shows on the weekends. There was Free to Choose by Milton Friedman. But more importantly, these are the things that influenced Ronald Reagan, who really came out of nowhere, fixed California by utilizing all of that absolute philosophy. So it wasn't an agenda of policy. It was a philosophy of an economy where the citizen had the right to his own property. I don't hear it. We're supposed to be so advanced. I feel like society in general doesn't have a fundamental grasp of those principles. Do you worry about that?
I do, but I see the states going in different directions. You know, again, I grew up in Illinois, and so I know what it's like there now. And I see Texas and Florida and Alaska and Wyoming, you know, going. I see them experimenting on different things. Wyoming, for example, as using the principle of the 10th Amendment on federalism, is now moving toward bank secrecy and bank privacy in a way that's attracting capital from all over the world. I think those are the kind of exciting developments, but they're happening probably more at the state level now. And that, hence the title, Red Blue Rumble.
I like it.
To say that within the 50 states, the states are making different choices and they have enormous economic consequences.
So that's really something for people to focus on as you release your children into the world and you think about where you're going to spend your money and investing in really buying a piece of these areas, is to be aware of all of this. So if you had kids, obviously you're not in Illinois anymore, but if you had kids, where would you direct them to live?
Well, it really depends on what they're interested in. If they're interested in, you know, just normal economic capitalism, obviously you head towards the states with zero income tax. That's a good place to be. On the other hand, it's undeniable that, you know, AI is coming out of California. And, you know, so again, if AI is proving that technological innovation coming out of places like Stanford or MIT is frankly worth a lot. And so you have to go where, again, follow the trend. That's kind of the point of directional investing, is to say, depending on the sector you're interested in, you make a choice as to where to move to, as you said, or where to invest to. That's the nice thing about this country, is there's 50 states to choose from.
Now, you worked on 6 presidential campaigns. I know Reagan, and then was it Bush Senior?
Bush Senior, yeah, and the Huckabee campaign as well.
Which 2008. Take Reagan out, because I feel like your answer would be Reagan. Out of those, which one impressed you by somebody who had the grasp of exactly what propertyism, referred to as capitalism, of what the principles of our nation, what they really were, and how to straighten things out? Who outside of Reagan were you most impressed with?
I mean, he was a presidential candidate. I wasn't involved in it. Jack Kemp. I mean, he had the most sense of the upward lift of free enterprise, and you know, and not only free enterprise, but also everybody being a part of it. That was Kemp's message, and it was a very attractive message. And I think any candidate today would be well, you know, suited. And it doesn't just be Republican. I mean, John Kennedy had the same message, 60 years ago.
Yeah, you know, I often talk about Reagan. I mean, Reagan's tax policy was really Kennedy's, and you know, when you look at the way in which government has grown, well, the citizen's domain over his own life has shrunk. Do you think that has to be something that needs to be focused on from the candidates? They have to start running on the fact that government cannot continue to grow. I mean, as you see under Joe Biden, we have an entire new bureaucracy popping up called the Climate Corps that has the potential in the bill to fund 50,000 employees per state. So don't you think that ultimately this is something that the opposition needs to focus on and needs to run on?
Well, I do. I think, again, I think that the, what's going to emerge, I think, from this election is a pretty profound split between red and blue. Okay, I mean, you know, Biden is almost certain to carry Illinois, you know, and New York and California and 20 other states. And Trump, or whoever, Trump will carry, you know, 25 states, give or take, and it'll be a close election. And I think out of that will come, you know, a genuine choice, you know, Mr. and Mrs. America, where do you want to live and which direction do you want to go? And I think you'll see people saying, let's go red, let's go blue. And out of that, you know, I've got a book called The United States of Arbitrage, where you can say, look, which place do you want to invest in or pay your taxes in or own a gun in or get an abortion in? These are the choices that people are going to have to make. And they're in a $30 trillion economy, there are enormous consequences, including opportunities for people to make those choices.
So, you know what I loved about investing is you would ask yourself, what if I'm wrong, right? And you hope for the best, but you prepare for the worst. So if I'm understanding you correctly, you're hoping that things change a trajectory and the nation comes together. But the reality is you're preparing for the division to get greater. Do I have it right?
I think the divisions are coming greater, but I think the opportunity is to heal those divisions with better, you know, capitalist deal making. And then the example I use is carbon capture. Again, you can't sustain a high-tech AI economy with windmills and solar. You can't. So you're going to end up with carbon fuels, and then people say, well, what about climate change? To which I say there's a whole other, and this is in the book too, there's a whole other industry to be created out of carbon capture. You know, carbon is a pollutant in the atmosphere, at least the EPA says it is, but it's carbon is also the stuff of biology, it's the stuff of, you know, cement, it's the stuff of, you know, wood. There's a million ways to plastics, pharmaceuticals. There's a million ways to capture carbon and turn it into something. And, you know, if you want to be a liberal about it, you call this, as they always do, the circular economy. So we have this wonderful recycling plan, and properly thought through, carbon fuels are a green, renewable, recyclable energy source.
So now, without specificity, because I want the people to understand that they have an opportunity to take advantage of your intellect and your experience, what state does James Pinkerton live in now?
I live in Virginia.
Well, you do? I would have lost $50. I thought you were down here with me in Florida.
No, I came with Reagan and then stayed with Bush and then with the Fox, and so I'm still here in the D.C. area.
Yeah, probably because your wife redid the kitchen and she won't let you move, right? In the meantime, the name of the book is The Secret of Directional Investing, Making Money Amidst the Red-Blue Rumble. He is James Pinkerton. I've enjoyed you for years on Fox. I appreciate the book. I can't wait to get through it. Thank you for educating and entertaining all of us for so long. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.